Hello, everybody, and welcome to this week's episode of RealCom Live. I know I promised you a couple weeks back we were going to take it a little easier on the AI topic, but unfortunately, this stuff is just coming at us so fast and hard that we would be remiss not to keep this conversation going. And I do promise you in episodes and weeks to come, we're going to break away a little bit and talk about some of the other very, very important topics that we're going to be talking at the conference. Specifically this week, we could not take advantage of an incredible opportunity to have our guest speaker on today. Ely Bajraktari is the president and CEO of SCSP, and it is an organization we've been working with for a couple years now and trying to keep on top of the global competitive technology issues that are facing the country. It's not just AI, it's 5G, it's quantum, it's next generation of computing. And so we like to leverage our community, you know, who are real estate, you know, IT innovation folks, with other groups who are doing different things, but we need. So in this case, and I don't want to steal this thunder, but SCSP has got a window and a door into Washington, D.C., and our government, and are trying to create a bridge between the public sector and various private sector initiatives, and in our case, the RealCom IBCon community. So Ely's going to be coming on, and we're going to be talking about a little bit about the organization, but we're going to get into the topic of artificial intelligence and an event they've got coming up that I think you're all going to be very interested. So with that, let's bring on Ely, and let's get this conversation started. Ely, how are you?
Thank you, Jim. How are you?
Oh, great. And again, I just want to say thank you to you, to your organization. Liza and team has been extraordinary in supporting us. She's spoken at a couple of our events. I know you came into our conference last year remotely to talk about 5G. Just really have a lot of appreciation for the work you guys are doing.
No, thank you, Jim. You and RealCom have been a tremendous supporters of our work, and we truly appreciate the partnership, and we look forward to continuing this.
Now, I know we've had SCSP on a bunch, but let's assume that there are folks listening that don't know. Why don't you give us a little bit of your background in SCSP, and then we'll get right into the conversation about artificial intelligence.
Absolutely. Happy to. So, Jim, I spent 12 years working in the Department of Defense. As an immigrant, there is no higher and better feeling than serving the country. And I think serving with the best and the brightest men and women in uniform is something. I grew up in Kosovo, and my family wouldn't be alive if it wasn't for the U.S. military and the action that U.S. military took in 1999 against Serbian forces in Kosovo. So for me, it was a true privilege to serve in the Pentagon for about 12 years. Wow. My last job in the Pentagon really took me a little bit off the track because I was asked to serve in the commission that Congress created to focus on artificial intelligence. So this is 2018, 2019.
Wow.
When a lot of people didn't know what AI is, except, you know, this was still happening in private sector primarily. But our Congress really was driven by two factors that wanted this commission to look. Number one was everything they were hearing and probably seeing in their, with their private companies in their constituencies was a powerful technology coming our way, a transformative once in a generation technology, as they call it. And then the second factor was really, if you look back in 17 and 18 and 19, Chinese efforts to really speed up, getting ahead in AI. When you look back in this time in history, you have speeches by the Chinese CCP leaders. You have massive resources dedicated to AI. You have emergence of like national AI champions, these companies in China. So that gave them, that gave our Congress really a source of concern because you have a really powerful technology, general purpose technology like electricity, like previous, transformative technologies that have happened in the course of history. And you have our main competitor really driving all in to get ahead in this technology. So they created a commission. I got to admit, I didn't know much about the commissions, Jim, but the most famous one being the 9/11 commission that was stood up after the tragic events of 9/11. And so Congress created what I considered the first probably a public-private independent body consisted of individuals from private sector, academia, and former high-level government officials to look at what our departments and agencies were doing with AI at that time.
This was 2018.
So it was 18 through 21. So the purpose was really not to look at, AI for the economy or the education. It was like, what can we do with AI? What are we doing with AI for the purposes of national security, given where China was going at that time? So in March of 2021, our team submitted a master report to Congress, 759 pages, that provided the pathway for some of the legislation that were passed since then, to include the CHIPS Act and some other legislations that our Congress and administration have adopted since then. Because I think that was the first wave of really recognizing that not only we got to get ahead in AI, when you look one step deeper into the other deficiencies we uncovered, is we had deficiencies in hardware, people, how we attract, how we build domestic capabilities, how we get ourselves organized, what kind of telecom systems you need to stay ahead in AI. So this AI, I think, is only, as you know, it's a constellation of technologies that includes data, people, hardware, software. And I think it's a great technology that you can get ahead by addressing so many deficiencies you have in your society. And so luckily, our Congress really understood the importance, then moved out. But at the end of the commission, these commissions, as you know, Jim, are timely limited with timely resources, which I think it's a great idea, because otherwise they become perpetual agencies, right, federal level. But if you give a commission a 2-year task with this money and you identify their mission, I think they deliver. There's an ongoing commission right now on biotech, which I think it's probably the next step that we should look at really carefully, because China, as you know, has gone all in on the bio and the genetics piece. But stepping back on the AI, when we got to the end of the commission, our founder of SCSP, Dr. Eric Schmidt, and Dr. Henry Kissinger were talking about their book they published later on called The Age of AI. And Kissinger talked and made similar parallel to where we are today with the parallel of the 1950s, which was, coming out of World War II, we're still riding the glory of the victory against the Nazi Germany. But we still haven't fully grasped the threat posed by Soviet Union. And we still didn't understand how to get ourselves organized, what kind of a framework of thinking we need to bring ourselves into to really get ourselves going against Soviet Union. So Kissinger in the 50s led a group called Special Studies Project, where they brought the best and the brightest from academia, private sector, national security advisors, and they looked at what can we do differently. Soviet Union was a serious security threat. By the 50s, they reached a nuclear parity with the United States. So we were talking about mutual destructions at that time. And so they produced this book called Prospect for America, which I never heard of the book. It's in the 50s. 400,000 copies sold, became a bestseller. But when you read it from today's perspective, it really provided a clear vision for what winning should look like. What do we need to do to get ourselves organized? What kind of a society we need to build, what kind of a system of values we have to build to counter the system of values that Soviet Union was building, not just internally, but around the world.
Yep.
And I think that informs the Eisenhower buildup and the set of institutions we launched since then, to include the National Science Foundation, NASA, and everything else since when, building the military, obviously. And so Eric came really inspired by Dr. Kissinger's story and said, hey, guys, I think we're at the beginning of the AI competition. There are two trends happening at the same time in 2020s. On one end, you have the AI and all these set of these technologies, bio, quantum, 5G, 6G, you name some of them. And then on the other hand, we are in a geopolitical generational competition with China. And now since then, I would argue there's an axis of disruptors that have assembled together. Russia, China, Iran, and North Korea, that really want to undermine the system that we have built since the end of World War II with our allies and partners around the world.
They're taking the long view. The way I look at it, they've got a plan, they've got a strategy, they're taking a long view. Sometimes it feels like we're playing whack-a-mole a little bit.
I agree, Jim. I think, as an immigrant, I think this is my observation. It takes America a little bit longer maybe to get there. But once it gets there, this is a big ship story. But once it gets there, America drives and leads.
Yep.
And I think we are at that turning point now to where we're realizing that, the China we have hoped for is not the China we got.
Well said.
And then I think looking at these disruptors in isolation, and ignoring that they're actually trading more with each other, exchanging military equipment with each other, helping each other. I mean, you know what's going on in Ukraine. You know, Russia using the Ukrainian, Iranian drones and North Korean missiles. Actually, they have expanded and deepened their relationship, because what they want to do is, what I would argue is, they don't have a better platform to offer globally. They don't. You know, nobody likes their model of governance and their systems of beliefs. But what they want to do is they want to showcase that we will not win. And yep. they want to challenge our will. Well, they want to challenge our system of values globally. They want to undermine us. They do it every day globally in Africa, in Southeast Asia, because they want to present a vulnerable America.
And would you agree that technologies, including AI and the wireless and communications infrastructure like 5, 6, 7G, whatever, that's going to play a significant part in their strategy?
100%. I mean, what you've seen in China, you know, as I mentioned, from the late 2015, 16, and 17, this is not me speculating. If you look at their strategies, their publicly released documents, speeches by their leaders, they clearly put technology and AI at the center of that national rejuvenation, national prosperity, commanding heights. These are like public documents. And then you have clear strategies, you know, Made in China 2025, being a global AI leader 2030, setting global standards 2035. So these are set of milestones that then have driven a lot of resources, a lot of energy to execute these plans.
I read something yesterday, Directive 79. Maybe I get the number wrong. Where basically it says
delete American.
I mean, so basically they're saying get all the American technology, the Cisco, the Dell, the and we have got vendors in our community that have been selling into China. I'll be curious to see how they're going to be impacted. I mean, we got, you know, business enterprise solutions that help people manage large portfolios of real estate. We got smart building technologies. So it's going to bubble down and impact us. We're going to take a break in a couple minutes, but I want to start the conversation on your expo because this is a way of getting that energy that you were talking about earlier. We're doing it. We did a Buildings AI event in Palo Alto in the fall. That's moving into our conference in June, where we're going to have a Buildings AI symposium, a pre-conference event focusing on AI. AI is going to be out through our whole conference. But what you're doing is you're aggregating the generalists, the big ships. So can you start to tell us a little bit, and then I'll stop you. We'll take a little break, and then we'll spend the rest, second half of the show, talking specifically about how we can work together in respect to your conference.
Yeah, absolutely, Jim. Let me quickly just walk you through our expectation and the objectives with the expo. When you look at our country after World War II, most of the innovation happened in government labs. That's where you saw most of the groundbreaking technological innovation. Since the end of the Cold War, we have cut the budget for basic R&D. So automatically, innovation and investments in R&D moved to private sector. And since the end of the Cold War to probably to 2020, most of the innovation, as you know, came from private sector. I think when you face a challenger like China that has a sieve mill fusion, that has enormous resources, huge human capital, top-down leadership that can drive, you know, these innovations and executions, then we have to be organized differently. And I believe we need a new public-private model.
Yep.
And I think our goal as a project is bringing these communities together. On one end, we want the technology, ecosystem to understand that, you know, national security doesn't happen in isolation. These technologies are all dual purpose. Our adversary knows that. That's why they're going all in and getting ahead in all these technologies. And we also want the national security professionals to understand that innovation is happening in private sector.
Yep.
And we will benefit as a country if federal government, if state and local agencies understand that by adopting these technologies faster, we will increase American prosperity, we will increase our economic growth, and ultimately we will make ourselves better and secure. And so the goal of the expo is really to bring small, medium-sized, large companies in DC at the convention center, which is the biggest space in DC, where you have all the federal government departments and agencies, and we want them to engage with each other through exhibitions, demonstrations, interesting conversation. We have more than 100 conversations will take place over the course of 2 days.
Wow.
We have more than 100 exhibitors in one place. We have 3 demo stages, separate conventions and panels organized at the same time, because I believe by bringing these 2 communities together, we will move forward as a country.
Well, and then it will, like, in your private, public-private conversation, we'll representing the innovative part of the built environment, right? So we're part of that private sector map. We want to come to that event strategically. We don't want to just, randomly walk in and hope, good things happen. So we'll continue to work with you, get the right people to meet your right people, so we can be very efficient and accelerate this conversation. We've already got at least 75 to 100 very specific case studies identified for the built environment, whether it be energy efficiency, security, cybersecurity, analysis of information, better decision making. So our gun has gone off and our race has started. And I want to make sure you're aware of that, so when we get to your event, that we take full advantage of each other.
Excellent. Yeah. Thank you, Jim.
So let's take a brief break, come back, and then we're going to talk about some of the companies that we might see at this AI Expo, and what some of the visitors may come to expect. We'll be right back. All right, we are back. So if you could go to the highest level, the 100,000 foot level, what is the ultimate goal of this event? I mean, do you have some deliverables that you're looking to get out of it?
So first of all, Jim, we have never done this before. So I would be the first one to admit that we have not done this before. But the inspiration came from multiple sources. We regularly bring these communities together, private sector with government, to talk about the cutting edge technologies, what needs to be done in the policy space, what are some of the groundbreaking innovation that is happening in private sector, so we can get moving in terms of providing some kind of a policy umbrella around these technologies. And we have noticed that there is eagerness in both camps, really, to have these conversations. Obviously, these conversations were really at the small groups. So when we looked around, we saw that nobody has ever organized an AI expo in our nation's capital. And as you know, usually this community is very divided. You have the Silicon Valley community, you have the Northeast community of tech companies, and then conversations happen sporadically. I don't think there's an organizing framework where you can bring these 2 communities together. So we thought, okay, with probably more than a dozen of government agencies in Washington, D.C., they all are struggling with 2 key things. Number one is how they are going to draft any kind of policies regarding these technologies, both for how we do it domestically, how we govern them domestically, but also, as we've discussed today on the show, how do we stay ahead of China? What kind of investments we have to make to stay ahead? So that's one piece of the puzzle that I think our government is struggling with right now. And the second piece is how can they adopt these technologies for their mission set? What does AI mean for the intelligence community? What does AI mean for our military men and women in uniform? How can they use it to advance their missions? And so I thought that by bringing together, the key objective is get the biggest place in Washington you can. When you talk about technology, it's one thing to talk about that. It's another thing when you see it, observe it, and even maybe feel it.
Exactly.
And so I thought Expo would be the right place where we can showcase to non-believers that, hey, this is the path where this technology is going. These are the cutting edge things you can do with this technology. We had a summit 2 years ago, Jim, in DC, where Anthropic and one of our friends, Jack Clark from Anthropic, demonstrated what large language models could do on stage. This is before the release of ChatGPT.
Right. I remember that, actually. I came in remotely. Yeah. I came.
It wowed people. And so for us, that was a really an eye-opening moment, because we thought, okay, if one technology company with one single demo, you can do this kind of a, effect in DC. When you bring 100 companies with university labs, with national labs in one place, when they can talk to each other, engage with each other, be part of interesting conversation, I think the effect of that would be enormous for our country. it would remove so many barriers between these two communities together. I mean, I believe ultimately the private sector companies will land contracts with government mm-hmm. in these companies, in these conversations, because I think we move forward when that symbiotic relationship between the public and private sector is healthy. It's profitable, because ultimately private sector should make money. Yep. And then our government knows what it's doing with its policies.
Can you give a couple names, some big names that'll be there, you know, big companies that people would recognize?
Absolutely. Not,
just a couple. Yeah.
No, absolutely. So we're really fortunate that Palantir decided to be our partner in this from the beginning. I believe Palantir is really the cutting edge technology. They have a future. Let me repeat that again. Palantir is, I believe, the future of where technology and the military capability should be in the future, that we need to start adopting now. Mm-hmm. And so I'm really excited that they're our partner. Other partners, we have not released all of them, but ultimately it would include Google, Microsoft. It will include Truepic, which is one of the cutting edge company that is doing the content provenance authentication. Mm-hmm. We have Strider from Utah, amazing company that we have been working for many, many years. Rhombus Power out of California. And we have Dakota State University. So many partners across the nation.
Dakota, that's good. Yeah.
We have been partnered with the DSU for 2+ years now. Tremendous relationship, tremendous university, outstanding president that leads the university. Student body is some of the most talented we have seen. Actually, one of the students from Dakota State University is right now with us as a fellow. So we have tremendous partners both in the private sector. We will announce also government labs, government agencies, as I mentioned, universities. So we have cast the net really big and really widely, because we wanted to bring whole of nation in our nation's capital showcase how we can move forward in this AI competition.
Well, we're going to do our best to keep our community organized so we attack your event with some precision, right? And I think if we do just a little bit of planning and strategizing, everybody, both your side and our side, will get more out of it. So I'm looking forward to our conversations, hopefully even next week, where we can sit down and then we'll get ourselves organized on our end. And I just want to again say thank you for what you guys are doing. We need leaders like you to step up, you know, every 50 years or so when big paradigms start to shift. And it's been shifting for, in my opinion, at least 25 years, but we're starting to feel the shakes, and it's time to get to work. We need to be well organized.
Thank you for having me, Jim. As I said at the beginning, RealCom has been a tremendous partner to us, and we look forward to continuing this relationship.
Yep, we're there with you every step of the way. Thank you so much for your time. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Jim, for having me today.
Okay, be well.
Thank you.
All right, well, that's a big conversation, as you can tell. Thank goodness we got people like Eric Schmidt and Ely, you know, on the forefront of this battle, if you will. And like I said, we've been working with them for a couple of years. Great people, group of people. They've been participating in our conferences, and they're going to be participating to some extent again this year in Tampa. We're going to continue to drill down and figure out how we leverage each other's communities. So with that, let's bring on one of my favorite parts of RealCom Live, Mr. Berger. I think he's not traveling this week. There you are, Howard. So what did you think about the – you got the memo, blue shirt memo today.
That was a fantastic conversation. Ely is tremendous. That whole team at SESP their vision, their execution, I really feel like we've got some of the right folks. As he said, it's turning a huge ship, but I feel – pretty confident.
Well, Eric Schmidt, in his days at Google, you know, is used to big ships. And I think that, you know, with a guy like him, you know, bringing in team members like Ely and others to you know, help fight this battle, I think very smart people, no doubt.
I think it was a great honor having Ely with us today. Yeah.
So let me get out of your way, do the news, and I'll be back in a couple minutes.
Okay. So moving to the news, I'm just going to highlight a couple of stories from our weekly briefing that goes out every Thursday. If you don't see it in your inbox, just go to realcom.com and click on news. So leading off this week, in kind of in line with Jim and Ely's conversation, in a significant move to achieve technological sovereignty, China has announced a robust plan to fast-track scientific innovation and reduce its reliance on American technology. And they're calling this the whole nation strategy. And they want to challenge U.S. dominance in AI chip making, quantum computing, and others with an estimated $51 billion increase in spending in these areas. So Li Qiong emphasized the PRC's intent to leverage all available resources to advance China's overall innovation capabilities, including a major push for disruptive and frontier technologies. This means big emphasis on attracting and developing the technology talent pool to pioneer new productive forces, quote unquote. Notably, the term technology appeared 26 times in Li's report, making this the highest count since 2015, indicating a very strategic priority shift. More than ever, this means U.S. needs to mobilize intelligently and quickly in order to compete with China's vision. And just as we've been talking for the last half hour. Enough said. Next, I want to say thank you to this week's technology partner, WTech, for this article on low voltage lighting as infrastructure. So this article comes from Tim Miskovich, Chief Commercial Officer for WTech, who has an innovative smart engine technology they've integrated in the 20,000 square foot office space at One Vanderbilt for Cressa. Excuse me. They worked with Schneider's EcoStruxure BMS to integrate energy efficiency lighting and indoor air quality, and their smart engine technology did reduce energy from lighting to just 0.2 watts per square foot, supporting sustainability while ensuring a comfortable, well-lit space. Also maintained pretty good high indoor air quality with real-time monitoring via the BMS. So in this article, Miskovich highlights the project's alignment with its goal of creating advanced workspaces and prioritize well-being and efficiency. Great story of a high-tech office transformation at One Vanderbilt, and it shows how innovative technology can create workspaces not only that are conducive to productivity, but also good for the environment. Next, Prologis breaking new ground. Prologis is the U.S.'s largest industrial warehouse space leader, and they've embarked on a $25 billion venture to develop data centers. Now, this decision taps into the surging demand for digital services, which is propelled by cloud services and AI. And with warehouse growth stabilizing, Prologis is seeking to cash in on the lucrative and growing data center market. It makes logical sense. Move exploits the similarities between warehouses and data centers, such as their structural needs and location criteria. Prologis now plans to repurpose its warehouse portfolio and generate $8 billion in data centers within 5 years. And this could lead to 100 new projects, scaling up to over $25 billion invested. This transition could yield 50 to 100% higher profit margins than their traditional ventures. It's a complex portfolio transformation, but if successful, it's going to radically increase Prologis' profitability and ensure sustained value creation. And finally, the SEC has voted to mandate companies with over 700 million in shares to report on Scope 1 and 2 carbon emissions, but will not be requiring Scope 3 reporting. And this new rule underscores the SEC's stance on climate risks as an economic threat. Now, investors have been advocating for emissions information, and many see this as a significant baseline, despite their calls for Scope 3 inclusion. Now, Scope 3 embodies companies' complete carbon footprint and comprises about 90% of building emissions. The thing is, it's pretty contentious, particularly in commercial real estate, where it's virtually impossible to track. Meanwhile, California is moving ahead to adopt regulations requiring businesses with revenues of $1 billion or more to publicly report greenhouse gas emissions, both for themselves as well as their entire supply chain. So guys, carbon regs, carbon reporting regs kicking in, it's getting real. Can't ignore them anymore. So those are just a few of this week's highlighted stories. Wish you all a great weekend, and back to you, Jim.
All right. You nailed it again. It's kind of ironic that news story. I mean, we've had Ely scheduled for weeks now, and for that story to bubble its way to the top was kind of interesting. That particular article, I believe it's called Directive 79. I gotta get the right name, but literally the nickname for the initiative is Delete America. And they're looking to get all of the technology, the Cisco's, the Dell's, and everything out of their country. And there's going to be some of our industry who's been selling software, you know, into that world that's going to be impacted by this. So this is going to be a conversation that's going to directly impact the RealCom, IBCon, CoreTech, Buildings AI world, right? So
we're going to let them do that to us, but we don't do that.
No. As you and I have been talking about for years, competition is one thing, but reciprocity and fairness is critical. And the tide has definitely changed, and we're going to have to take a different look at this. You know?
Yeah. Well, you know, as Ely pointed out, that he does see that the ship is turning and the tide is changing. And when we do mobilize, we usually get stuff done. I hope that holds true.
Yep. Well, we've done it in the past, and we're certainly going to do it again in the future. So thank you. Great job, Howard. I'm going to just say goodbye, and I'll see you next week.
Thanks, everyone.
Okay. All right. So before we wrap this week's show and talk about next week a little bit, let's hear from our last sponsor, and I will be right back. All right. So next week, we got a fun, not AI. We're going to do something a little bit different. One of the things actually that Eli and I were talking about is getting everybody excited about technology and leaning in and pushing. And one of the ways that you can do that inside your own company, or maybe you aggregate a couple companies, maybe kind of a little industry consortium kind of thing, to create what we call a built environment technology innovation lab, which means you have a place where you bring technologies to play around with, explore, and really lean in, as opposed to waiting for somebody to knock on your door, you know, as a salesperson, or to go to a conference and see. And we've seen these initiatives certainly in other industries, the automobile industry, the military, and we've actually seen instances of this over the years in the built environment. So next week, we're going to have some fun. We got two folks that many of you already know, Alon Zakhar and Aaron Alcher from Carr Properties, and they're going to be mobile, and they're going to actually be walking through their innovation lab in Washington, D.C. So they're going to be able to stop and talk about some of the things that they're looking at, prototyping, playing with. And it's not just them sitting at the desk. They're going to be in the lab, moving around. And I think you're going to see some really interesting things that hopefully will excite you, inspire you. And we'll continue this conversation of innovation labs at the conference. So excited about that. And it's going to be a lot of fun. Hope you join us. And we will see you next week on RealCom Live. Be well.